Hi, I'm Ken Carroll. These recordings are provided by ChinesePod.com.
This is a Learning 2.08 conference podcast. This and all conference conversations recorded live in September 2008.
Was anybody in my other session?
Good. That was kind of a mess because someone had gotten onto my website, I found out right before I got here, and put on some not so nice things. I think it was an automated program that kind of sneaks in there and tells you how to go change your body size and so forth. So that was kind of interesting. But we got it cleaned up in a matter of an hour and a half. So at any rate, my name is Lori Hagela. This is my second year presenting at this conference. Just to tell you a little more about myself and why I chose this topic. A long time ago in a faraway place, I went to a place called the Ohio State University.
Ooh.
Are you a Michigan fan?
Penn State.
Yeah, Joe Paterno, huh? So I actually got a business degree, and I started out in education. But at that time, we were told there were no jobs in education. The only ones that existed were like in Bear, Alaska, which ironically I was just at 2 weeks ago. And for a variety of reasons, I switched and got into business. And at that point, I regretted it a little bit that I didn't pursue my area of education. But it kind of all worked out. I worked at Rockwell International back when it was a major aerospace company. And I was very fortunate. I got to work in the spares department on the B-1 program and on the electrically suspended gyro navigator. It took me a week to learn how to say that. I also worked on GPS and frequency boards, as you know it now, something on your car, handheld, or you could go geocaching. But the significance of that experience before I became a teacher was that I was fortunate that I worked for a project manager that said, Lori, if you're going to be 24, 25 years old, going out and negotiating with these big aerospace guys, or these big Air Force guys, you're going to have to really know what you're talking about. So he took me out into the lab and helped teach me how to solder things, how to really understand when we were simulating GPS technology and we were refining it, things on the B-1 that we were working on. And I found that I kind of liked it. And like this geek side of me, for lack of a better term, kind of came out. And the more I delved into it, and I started taking Fortran programming classes, I don't know if they teach that anymore, but it kind of all took off from there. And after 4 years of working at Rockwell and never having a day off, because it was a very demanding job, I said, you know, I think I want to go back and be a teacher, but I have a little more reason to now. Because when I graduated from high school, my parents were told I should go to trade school, but I wasn't, you know, very bright. Maybe they were right, I don't know, but I beg to differ now. And I think the difference was is some of the things that I was interested in, I did not get exposed to until well after high school. And I was just very fortunate that I worked with a gentleman that I did at the time to really teach me hands-on, which is how I learned to be a lot of children learn. And I wanted to share that with other kids, and I wanted to share that in the classroom. Because I always felt kind of cheated that I'd missed those opportunities. I was a girl, so you wouldn't have even thought of taking an engineering class in high school. Lots has changed since then. But so that's kind of how I switched from that career to going to Cleveland State University. That's in Cleveland, Ohio, right along Lake Erie, for those of you who are not from the United States. I was laughing the other day. I was doing a short-term job in a school in Cleveland. Five, six high school girls sitting there talking in French to their teacher, and in French she had asked them what the five Great Lakes were, and they couldn't name them. Homes. Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior. So those girls will know it from now on. But at any rate, so I went to Cleveland State, got a master's in education. I focused on curriculum and foundations, and then with a minor in technology education. And from there, I went to teach at Cleveland Public Schools. And I always thought when I went in, you know, I did want to expose kids more to engineering type concepts and things. But we didn't even have an Apple TV in our room yet. I don't even know if it was embedded when I started. One day, we did finally get one. One day, my principal comes down and says, bought this for you, Lori. You seem like the only person in the building that would know what to do with it. And it was a modem. And I'm going to tell the total truth, just so you know where I started from. I didn't know what it did. So I went home and asked my husband, and he told me. Then I went back to the school, and I explained to my principal how we had to take apart the Apple II GE and, you know, pick it all up and this and that. She goes, well, none of our employees here at the Canada staff knows how to do that. So somehow or another, now does anybody here have any association with the Cleveland Union? But because my husband and I were allowed in the building on Saturday, and we went in and installed the whole thing, which probably would have gotten us all fired. But so we installed the modem, and from the first day we had that up and running, I had the kids participating in something called Problem of the Day. And mind you, this is back when screens were green, the two-tone green. There were no pictures, there were no audio files, there were none of the MySpace and blogging that we have today. But these at-risk kids that I was working with were coming to school excited because they were waiting for that one email with the math problem of the day. And they wanted to read. And they wanted to solve the problem. And what amazed me was that when they would type the answer at the end of the day to go back, they were correcting me. Well, no, you spelled this word wrong. You got to put a comma after that. Are you sure we did that math problem right? And then the light bulb went off that we think through technology. It doesn't just sit in your classroom and add something to it by being there, but you use it as a tool. And through that tool, you gain and you learn. And that's kind of where I took off in with tech integration. So everything kind of went up from there. I got it at that point. I went to go work at Laurel School for Girls. I don't know if anyone's heard of Laurel. Probably haven't. But there was a study done by Carol Gilligan from Harvard University called In a Different Voice. She also wrote a book called Meeting at the Crossroads. If you haven't come across those books, sometime you may want to read them. She was at our school for a long-term study during her doctoral program trying to understand why girls lose their voice from primary to middle school. She has interviews of girls in second and third grade where they can conquer the world and do anything they want and beat up their brother and this and that. And by the time they get to middle school, she notices the shoulders go down, they aren't interested in math, they don't speak up as much. And it's a very interesting study. It's fascinated me, and I've spent a lot of time trying to work out curriculum that you normally wouldn't start in middle school, but to push it down to primary to get girls interested in engineering and technology. Because I think sometimes we wait too late. And I know that's not the point of our talk today, but I just thought I'd throw that in. So that's where I come from. I was at Laurel 9 years, and just by luck, 2 years ago, some consulting jobs kind of came my way, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. And so far, so good. Knock on something, it's been working out all right. The reason I chose this topic is part mom of three girls and part teacher. And what really got me thinking was I was sitting with a good friend of mine one day, happens to be in a rock band, and not that that's the point, but he was telling me, I had shared with him, my daughters are not getting cell phones. Now, my daughters right now are 15, 14, and 10, and I am you are looking at the world's worst mother. We have never had a Nintendo or an Xbox. They may not watch DVD movies in the car unless we're going on a long trip that's over 2 hours. There's the no cell phone rule. And as I was talking to this friend of mine, he was telling me that his daughter had just broken up with her boyfriend, 14 or 15 years old, by texting. And my first reaction was, it's awful. I mean, there's no voice behind it, there's no feeling behind it. And he said, well, Lori, wait a minute. They've grown up with this technology, you and I haven't. So I asked her, did she understand what he said in the message? She said, yeah. And maybe he understood, but he wrote back, yeah. And are you okay? Mm-hmm. You know, moving on, Dad. And so it made me step back and think, maybe rather than being the meanest mom in the world and being very anti-technology, even in the school setting, I needed to rethink how I was looking at some of these new things that have arrived. Cell phones, iPods, and a couple others. Wiki is a hot topic, which I'm going to start with in a minute. So from there, I want to show you what I found, because I did a little research, I did some talking to teachers, read some articles, thought about it, and jump in if you see a point up here or you have something to add that adds to it or counters it, because it's really a topic I think we're still exploring. Do we allow cell phones in the classroom? Can they be useful? Can students take notes with them? Can they take them on a field trip and take pictures and then bring them back and use it as a prompt for their writing? Things like that. And over the next half hour or 45 minutes, I'm going to talk about Wikipedia. By the way, how many of you are pro Wikipedia for your students? And it doesn't matter either way. How many of you right now just kind of, maybe not, anti-Wikipedia? And how many of you aren't going to tell me or care? Because I think after doing a lot of reading on the Wikipedia thing, that I came up with some very, very interesting facts you'll be interested to know. iPods. When I was at Laurel, they were banned from the school. I would not support that anymore, and I'll get into that in a minute. Cell phones and texting. So add that to all the other things we face with software and choices we have to make for children, and it gets a little overwhelming. So let's start off with Wikipedia. What do you know about Wikipedia? Have any of you used Wikipedia? All the time, right. Come on, your secrets are safe with me.
Well, anyone can go in and post, or edit, I should say, content that is already on there.
Right, and that's a concern, because as you know, when kids go out and they research, I've seen my own girls do it, they go on Google, they're researching something, and they read the first two sentences of the hit, and they think they've got something, and they don't check what I call the veracity of the website. It drives me nuts. They don't check the, you know, who wrote it, when was it posted, is it someone's opinion, or is it coming from a credible source? So that's certainly something for concern. Other thoughts about Wikipedia? Now, that one gentleman's career was almost ruined back in the States with a Secret Service for Kennedy, because someone had put a complete lie up about him. Since that time, Wikipedia has really clamped down. Yeah, that's true, and I didn't realize that until I started using it a lot myself. It's accessible in many different languages. Do you know one of the most popular months in the United States for Wikipedia is? For hits? There's one month out of the year where the traffic spikes. February. Because in the United States we study Martin Luther King Day. So that tells us, these children, even though we're saying, maybe you shouldn't use Wikipedia, because Wikipedia may not be reliable. Somebody can go in and edit it, someone can change it. Guess what? They're still going there. So I thought, you know what? You can't be enjoying them. This is a teaching opportunity. Because one of the things, as I mentioned earlier, is the way they search on the internet right now is click it, click it, click it, and no checking for veracity, I like to call it, of the website or the documentation. What better way to do it? If they're going to go here and we can't stop them, why not teach them how to use it right? And then I found some more interesting facts about Wikipedia. So first, you have a teaching opportunity here. I'm sorry that came out a little small. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'm just going to skim it for you, but it's by Bill Tanzer. Look who's using Wikipedia. Let's see here. The majority of top terms bear a close resemblance to elementary school homework and research projects. During the month of February, which is also Black History Month, there are the top 20 sending traffic to Wikipedia were for prominent Black historical figures, while two other searches were likely motivated by President's Day. In fact, changing time frames to any other month during the school year reveals a similar result. So they're going there and they're using it. So we can't make that go away as educators.
And this would not be uncommon that schools are banning Wikipedia just for what we pointed out earlier, is the concern that anybody can go in and edit it, edit the text, update it, change it, and then it loses its validity. I will have this up on my website if you want to read this article more. I just don't want to read everything verbatim to you. But I found that really interesting. Well, this came straight from Wikipedia. We do not expect you to trust us. It is in the nature of an ever-changing work like Wikipedia that while some articles are in the highest quality of scholarship, others are admittedly complete rubbish. We are fully aware of this. We work hard to keep the ratio of the greatest to the worst as high as possible. And of course, you'll find helpful ways to tell you in what state an article currently is. And even at its best, Wikipedia is an encyclopedia. And remember that. We're going to come back to that point. With all the limitations it entails, it is not a primary source. We ask you not to criticize Wikipedia indiscriminately for its content model, but to use it with an informed understanding of what it is and what it isn't. And also because some articles may contain errors. Please do not use Wikipedia to make critical decisions. Now, I do know, having been on Wikipedia a lot now, just checking things out, they will give a log of who entered what at what date, and then if it's under, they will put it under a watch, and if they can't verify the latest correction, it will be taken off. So that's something new, I don't know if you're aware of, so I think that's a nice addition.
What do they verify again?
I think they research the facts, like if someone says, Lori Hakala won an Academy Award. I think they go and they look and see, did I really win an Academy Award?
When where do they go to check that?
They probably have to call the Academy, you know, out in Hollywood, wherever they are. So I'm sure some things aren't researchable to verify. And at that point, that's where, you know, you teach kids again, well, let's check other sources and see what the other sources say.
The thing is, I think that the day that you're referring to as far as fact-checking stuff isn't any sort of Wikipedia entity, but it's other people that are looking at it saying, I know something about this and it's right, or I know something about this and it's wrong. And that's where the fact-checking comes in. Because people sort of take ownership of topics that they know a lot about and
right.
are sort of not employed, but are asked to continue to maintain the validity, as you're saying.
Right. And why not? We're a community. And as long as they're not going off the deep end, and like you said, these are people who might be experts in that area. You know, if it was something on Teddy Roosevelt, I'd be there 24/7. So we all have our thing. But again, it all comes back to verifying your resources. This is a comic I put in that I thought was kind of funny, especially now with the election going on in the States. I have to keep remembering I'm not in the U.S. right now. Guy says a citation is needed. Interestingly enough, John F. Kennedy was credited for saying the very famous ask not what you can do for your country, but ask not what we can do for you. I'm tired and on jet lag. But what you can do for your country. Ask not what we can do for you, what you can do for your country. He didn't say that the first time. In Marion County, President Harding, if you go through his library, who was president well before John F. Kennedy, has it written in his diary, in an old speech he never gave to too many people. It was one that he was going to give, and then it wound up being a small talk, because he lived in Marion, and he had this big porch. He would do these porch talks, and it was one that was not well attended. He was the one who coined the phrase first. Just, like, you know, and that wasn't on Wikipedia. So, just another... let's see here. Just some other interesting facts before we move on. To find 4 entries with errors in 25 biographies may seem a source for concern, but they go on to say that in Encarta, they checked 10 Encarta biographies, and that also appear in Wikipedia, and in the commercial product found at least 3 biographies with factual mistakes. So some of those resources you may be sending your students to, thinking that Encarta or some of the other sources you use are more foolproof, may not be. Even the carefully edited American National Biography Online, whose biographies are written by experts, contain at least one factual error in the 25 entries I examined closely. The date of Nobel Prize winner I.I. Rabi's doctoral degree, a date that Wikipedia gets right. Wikipedia then beats Encarta, but not American National Biography Online in coverage, and roughly matches Encarta in accuracy. So again, I'm just rethinking this whole Wikipedia thing and seeing that it is definitely a source, but one you want to verify, just like you would if you got something from an encyclopedia or somewhere else, rather than just saying no to Wikipedia. Because I still run into a lot of schools, especially in the States, that it's just banned from the school. I don't want to bore you too much. It's kind of the same thing, but more documentation of when you can compare to the Encyclopedia Britannica and other resources we're used to using as educators. Wikipedia is right up there with them and sometimes beats them.
Still, there's a question, why would you go for Wikipedia and not for Encyclopedia Britannica? What reason would you go for all that as your number one choice?
This is a good question. This is the millennial generation. And that's where they think to go first. I mean, I understand your point, and I don't disagree. But this is how these kids think. You know, the computer's there.
Another argument might be when I was younger, I might talk to my friends first of all and not check a newspaper for facts. But that doesn't mean going to my friends first is the right choice.
It's right.
Just because I choose that doesn't mean that that should therefore be the right choice.
Right.
I'm saying with Wikipedia, just because people go to it doesn't mean necessarily.
Right, and that's what we need to teach the kids. In the statistics show they're going to use it, like when they showed the example in February, Black History Month. So if they're going to use it, let's get that message out. Okay, it's one resource, but where else are you going to look? Cite three sources, and Wikipedia may be one of them, rather than just banning Wikipedia. So.
I still don't see how that means you teach through, or you teach about Wikipedia. If everyone looks in a popular magazine for facts, does that mean you use that as the vehicle for teaching them about validity of facts?
I would. If they went to a magazine, I'd have them read it and say, does this sound like somebody's opinion? Who was the person that wrote this? When was the last time they published an article before this?
Obviously you would do that, but it seems like you're pushing Wikipedia up to the top.
Oh.
As opposed to any other way of
And that might be, it might be a U.S. thing, and I apologize because it's a huge topic over there right now. And schools are either on it or against it. And so I may be overdoing it a little bit here, and if I am, I apologize. It's a hot, hot topic at home. So.
I think one of the keys is accessibility. When you type any word on Google,
the Wikipedia's getting a lot of first hits.
Encarta or something else would be free and let people pick one. I'm sure it could be that.
Yeah. Yep. And it depends too. I don't know if Wikipedia is intentionally doing meta crawlers to get their hits up towards the top or not. That's something I don't know.
That might be more interesting to me because that again biases interpretation.
Well, that's a very good point. I haven't thought about that, but that's something worth researching. And another aside, too, and this is a whole other lesson, but if you're not teaching your kids this, and it's another pet peeve of mine, and I'll tell you why. I teach them from like grade 4 to use Boolean indicators. Are you familiar with those? So a lot of teachers aren't that I work with. But if I'm looking for something and I want to narrow the searches, okay, I might put a quote, and let's say I'm looking for, let me think of something quick here. I want anybody named Lori Hinkala. So I'm always fascinated by who the heck else would have my name, right? And who would live in Ohio. So first, if I just want to look for anything that has the text Lori with the space and Hinkala next to it, if I put quotes next to it, it will only return documents with this string in this order. If I take off the quotes, it will return any document that could have Lori here and Hegela down here. They don't have to be together. So think of this as the glue that keeps that phrase together. Okay. Now I want to know if there's any Lori Hagelis that live in Ohio. So now I've been told, this is the programmer me, I do plus, which I tell the kids means and, Ohio. Now I've been told I don't need to do the plus anymore, but old habits die hard. So, so now I would retrieve documents that would have the word Lori and Hagelis next to them. And somewhere in that article, Ohio. Now this is a really simple example, but if your students were studying maybe polar bears from a certain region and you wanted to get on all the rest, or a topic that could get really convoluted and you really wanted a certain narrow part of it, the more quantifiers you give it, the better hits they get. You can also do a minus. I don't want any articles that say global warming because I'm really tired of hearing about it. No, but so I can say without. Because this is another skill, and on the subject of Wikipedia and researching, is when they do go to the net, because they do to search, I'll give you the perfect example. It's a little bit of an off-color example, so I hope I don't offend anyone, but this is an absolutely true story. So I'm in the lab, and the girls are doing their science project. They're eighth graders, right? And the one girl wants to know, she's a very talented soccer player, how rain and the different amounts of rain on the ball affect the trajectory when she kicks it to make the goal. Of course, she hasn't had my wonderful how to search on the internet lessons. So she walks right up, sits at the computer, and types in wet balls. We don't have a filter at the school I worked at. We do now. Because she didn't know how to research. It was funny, and fortunately what came up wasn't so bad, but it was a rude awakening that, first of all, let's use some guidelines on how we search. Let's use some of these Boolean indicators. Let's also use good terminology, too. So, at any rate, so, you know, piggybacking on what you're saying, this is another skill that kids do need to learn that I don't think is taught. I've taught, and maybe here, you got to keep beating me over the head that I'm not at home right now. But I know at least in the groups I work with in the U.S. and the public schools, I have teachers going, really? So I can just do Johnny Depp and the movies he did in these years? I'm like, yeah. But any other questions on that? You could probably find some websites on Boolean indicators that give you even a few more examples of how to put things in and take them away. And this is pretty much repeating. I don't want to beat you over the head with this. That, you know, it's just one resource, and it's pretty competitive with some of the other things the kids use, which then they have to decide which is the one they're going to find reliable or the one that's, you know, they're going to go with, how they're going to verify. And I think maybe I'm preaching to the choir here a little bit, but if educators would shift their thinking about Wikipedia, so much critical thinking could take place. The key value of Wikipedia is its transparency. You can understand how a page is constructed, who is invested, what the other investments are. You can see when people disagree, which that is kind of a neat thing, because you can't get that out of a textbook. You can see people going, but wait a minute, that's not quite how I remember it. About content in the discussion, the disagreement was resolved. None of our traditional print media makes such information available. Understanding Wikipedia means knowing how to. And I liked her points here, and they are good teaching points. Understanding the assembly of data and information into publications, interpret knowledge, question purported truths, and vet sources. That's really hard for kids in high school. And again, I'm speaking kind of from where I'm at, but they'd love to take things at face value, it seems, and then just put it in their report and run with it. You gotta question things. Even if it seems true, oh wait, you know, I'm not so sure about that. Analyze apparent contradictions and facts. Productivity contributes to the large body of collective knowledge. And you know, I was just thinking about this here as I was rereading this, that we're becoming more and more of a global society. And it goes without saying. So we are collaborating much, much more on knowledge and sharing ideas and cultures and differences. So it is a good skill to develop at some level. Questions before I move on? Just kind of wanted to touch on the Wikipedia thing. Because like I said, it's very hot in the U.S. The next one, I'm thinking it probably affects you more here, are iPods and cell phones. And before I go too far, just get a feel from the different schools you're at. Do you find them problematic? Are the kids asked to keep them at home? How are you dealing with some of these technologies?
Well, at the junior school, we don't allow them to talk more about phones purely because if they get broken, it's a school issue, we don't want to deal with expensive equipment being broken.
And a junior school where you are is what, like 5 through 8 or?
7 to 11.
Oh, 7 to 11.
You know, if we go on school trips, we'll allow them to take them. If it's relevant, but it's an interfere with the pastoral aspect of the trip. Because they don't bring them because the whole idea is to be isolated. So there'll be educational reasons why not all the costs.
Sure.
In terms of education, I'm already looking at the curriculum and thinking how we can bring them in and use them.
Good. Anybody else?
Love them? Hate them? Don't know what to think?
I mean, in high school here, they all have mobile phones, but they're rarely a problem. I find that when the children come into class, as soon as the students walk in, the first thing I have to say is, take out your iPod and put it away. That can be annoying, but the phones themselves don't bother, or they don't seem to be an issue.
They're respectful.
Oh yeah, which is what you say, but they all have their headphones.
All right,
those
are
why does that happen? Presumably, they then walk into every classroom and get told not to pay attention to something.
They used to have headphones on.
Yeah. Is that part of the game? Or do some teachers allow them to do it?
I don't think that there's any teachers that allow them to have them in. They just have them in between classes and
get that last note in.
Yeah, the last note before the teacher says, okay, headphones out.
She didn't realize was that child was screaming for their test. They had their notes on their iPod, and they're in that last pack before you gave them.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that is, which is kind of my point, is that I have found, especially my middle daughter is dyslexic, and she has an iPod, and we found that when we went to iTunes and there are some other places, I can get the unabridged versions of the books downloaded onto her iPod, and then she can read along, and I don't excuse it for she's in the Wilson Reading Program to help her with her dyslexia. But boy, she just feels so much better because, you know, some kids with dyslexia, they don't hear the word pronounced right, they're pronouncing it wrong in their head, and then that affects their comprehension. She's hearing it pronounced right and the right flow in the sentence, and it just helps her so much more. So whenever we can find a book on tape, we'll put it on her iPod for her to listen to it. And they love her doing it at school. Well, and then I was noticing last year, she said this year, memorizing facts for safer history tests just wasn't going to happen. So I went on Apple's website, and they have lots of freeware on there, and they have a free flashcard maker. You can make flashcards any way you want for any subject. They're just basically plain, and you can have a question on one side and the answer on the other. You can have both on one side, so depending on the type of student you have. You can program it so they get it right 2 times and it comes out of the stack. A lot of flexibility. That's not a bad idea. They're recording my talk right now. If somebody couldn't make it to this session and wanted to hear it later, slap on the iPod, sing up a lecture, or a child has a hard time retaining information and needs to hear it a second time. I could have used that in math in high school. I had the teacher, you know, telling me again on how to work through some of those problems. So I'm starting to see a lot of positives with things like the iPod, snappy iPod, we didn't call it, using that as an example.
Kind of what this lady says, it brings in an interesting sort of a paradigm, doesn't it? Because this was the point I was making as to why we do that. Do we, I mean, there's a lot of sessions here about gaming, about bits and pieces like that. Now, will there be a point at which you turn around and you say to the children, come in, I've got a lesson, it's optional where you're getting this. Because if you've got something in an iPod and studying, and you've got that badge in you, then I'm just going to assume you're learning. You know what I mean? Because is it my responsibility to make sure the kids are told, get those out of your ear, I'm the font of all knowledge, you will sit and listen to me, and I am responsible, therefore, for your progression through your learning journey? Or is it that you are coming into my class as a person wanting to learn, so I'm assuming that you have lots of different learning modalities, one of them may be listening to an iPod and learning something, in which case I will trust you as an individual. Do we reach the point, I mean, you know, let's face it, we're talking kids who are going to have this stuff in their ear, and invariably they're not going to have this stuff in their ear. They are listening to me.
They aren't?
But, well, how do we know?
Oh, you, my daughter told me she was listening to Little Women. No.
And see, this is an issue, isn't it? It's
yeah.
An interesting point, isn't it?
It is. I'll have to see her grade after this next book. But, well, I think that what I picked up on your sentence that is close to my heart is different modalities of learning. With my Megan, and I hate to be like Piaget and use my kids as guinea pigs, but she does do better when she has the book read to her, she makes her own flashcards, she's a little more independent. That's just her modality of learning. My youngest one, forget it, she wouldn't sit still for 2 seconds to do that. You know, she's a little sponge, she hears it once and then she's outside playing. So your point about modality of learning is very well taken. And I think the challenge is identifying those kids and probably developing plans for them and having the other kids respect it. Yes, you can listen to whatever book you're reading right now, you know, where the Red Fern Grows, okay? You can listen to it on tape as part of your plan, but no, you're all right if you read it out loud. And some of the kids aren't gonna like that. They're gonna think that's not fair, and I'll tell you what I told them. Life's not fair. It is what it is. You know, they'll have to deal with it. So it is. It's a tough call, but we can't turn our back on it. Because for every learner we catch, it's one more kid that's just going to go a little further. And so iPods, I'd like to see them in class. Or, you know, you can sync your calendars to iPods. So, like, I'm here. Where am I? Shanghai, I'm sorry. I go from here to Australia. When I left, we all gathered around the computer, we all synced the family calendar to know who was doing what when, you know, on each other's schedules, especially my husband. But the kids each enter their activities and it goes into one master calendar. And we can also get it online through iGoogle, so my husband immediately gets his iPod in this time and still see where he's supposed to pick up the girls. So I think there are other advantages to it as well. Kids who have trouble organizing. There are some free to do organizers that you can download onto the iPod. I found one from Megan, and I keep talking about one of my daughters. But when she was a real logistical mess, there was a software 2 or 3 years ago off of Apple's website that was free that helped them determine if you had something to do on a Friday and it was a Monday and kind of pace yourself out. And eventually, like this year now, she can do it on her own. But she needed that little help, that little guide. So I see a lot of positives. Whether they're listening to music or not, I guess you gotta walk behind them and see what's on the screen. I don't know how you can lock down the music. Unless it's music that goes with what they're studying. But sometimes I think that if you trust the kids, and then you say, hey, you can use this for class for this and this and this, but please, you know, wait and listen to the music in the hallway. I'd like to think some of them would be respectful then.
Is there any research that says iPods help kids achieve? There's a concern I have.
Electronics are basically outlawed at our school unless there's a reason.
Sure.
One thing we really value is collaboration and communication. See someone with an iPod on, that eliminates their ability to communicate with others. So I'm always wondering, sure, there are obvious benefits and we should plan for those, but as a rule of thumb, is that really beneficial because they're more and more harmful if collaboration and communication is really priority? And for me, I think that, you know, what I'm seeing, research that I'm doing, is that a generation from now, it's not going to be the kids who have the factual data that you get from the iPod, it's the kids who can communicate among their fellow human beings that are, that will be successful. So I'm wondering if maybe we're not going exactly in the direction.
We need, I mean, you see the both sides. So yeah, mindful, I love that word. It's true, we have to be mindful because they don't want to take away something that's helping. On the other hand, right, because texting, I still have trouble with probably, but texting, there's no voice behind it, and it's a degradation in communication. Although, like my friend said, hey, Lori, third generation. But I still like them to know how to talk and how to communicate with each other. And so it is a fine line we're coming across here. We have to be good stewards of how we handle it. I don't know the perfect answer. No music in the hallway. But, yeah, something to think about. In terms of studies of long-term benefits, that's something I would be interested in looking into. I have not. I think we need a little more long-term data. 1 to 2 years isn't going to, that's too short. But hopefully someone started something. Other things?
I just wonder if that few months for public space has taken thoughts.
I can speak for the states that some of the kids are like, you know, texting back and forth the answers. And so the teachers are collecting the cell phones at the door.
So and kids are allowed to have their cell phones out during tests, I hear.
They were. Well, they were sneaking them in.
What about your lessons?
Well, this is just it. The flip side is they're going to have cell phones. And I'll get to a slide that kind of brings a full circle, but they can take notes with their cell phones and take them home and download them if they wanted to, or they have them right there in their hand. Not something I'd want to do, but we have to keep reminding ourselves, the millennial generation, this is what they've grown up with. This is still kind of new for us. I do take little notes now on my iPod. I need to pick up eggs on the way home. But yeah, they can take notes. They can record a lecture, especially if a kid is real auditory learner, needs to hear it again. They can take pictures on a field trip. They can take pictures of the kids hitting each other. I mean, it's again, it's that double-edged sword. But if you teach the kids to use it in a good way, a productive way, because some of those ways they're going to use in the workforce, you may as well teach them to use it right. It does come along with other issues. I don't disagree. But I think if we keep saying no, like, I loved this. This is from an elementary school. Let's see. No hard balls, bats, or hockey sticks. Well, have any of you heard of the book called Nature Deficit Disorder, What's Wrong with Today's Kids? It's tongue-in-cheek. Our kids don't get out enough and play. So I found that kind of humorous that they can't bring hockey sticks to school. I guess they hurt each other. I'm just thinking they go out and play hockey. No electronic games, radios, Walkman, iPods, handheld games. Personal items, including but not limited to electronic devices, such as cell phones, are not allowed to be used in school during school hours. And this goes right in the same paragraph, more or less, in the same area as students are prohibited from engaging in the following activities: physical fighting, play fighting, name calling, using put downs, making racial slurs. So they've kind of got, I was a little disturbed that keeping the cell phone out of school was at the same level as fighting and making racial remarks. You know, I didn't see them quite as serious as each other. So I don't know if they meant it to be that way, but it came off to me that way.
The rules in schools come normally from negative actions. Like in England, lots of students were what's called happy slapping. They were deciding to go and beat somebody up, some stranger up, go and beat the kid up. Use a cell phone to video it and then send it all around to the mates. And you know that is abuse of the technology, and that's outside of
it. Or is that the parents?
It's a problem from somewhere.
It's a problem from somewhere.
And that is an issue which a school cannot allow that to happen. And one way of controlling it is to limit the use of mobile phones. And that's not to say you can't still have a curriculum which allows that usage. But they're obviously looking at free usage and saying, well, it's become an issue, we have to control that. So I can understand why it's in those rules from that point.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. It's like, you know, hockey sticks, of course we want kids to play hockey, but I don't want kids walking with a hockey stick in his hand, because we know we've got 15
kids. It was my goal.
Yeah. And you can see why sometimes you have to make those choices.
Yeah.
That's not to say there isn't an education value in the things that you haven't done, but you have to control that usage.
Right, and they're tough questions, and I'm certainly changing my mind, because like I said, I am the neatest mom in the world, and my older two just got cell phones a week ago, partly because I was coming here, and so I guess my status has gone down a little bit, but I said, well, you know, you guys have been getting home from school fine all along and been able to use the office to call when you need to be picked up, so, but it has helped out. Well, just kind of riding on the coattails of that, there's an excellent, excellent book that I discusses a lot of these issues that I would highly recommend you read. And it's an easy read. It's not one of these, you know, you're going to get a headache. It's a pretty easy go. Millennials Rising, the Next Generation. Is anyone familiar with it? Somebody from Cleveland Museum of Science recommended it to me. And the thing that surprised me the most, and I thought it was just my three daughters, but that this generation, every generation kind of had their label. There was Generation X, and there was this generation, and I think in the 80s it was the kids, it was all about me, 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 you know, and the self-centered kids. And they had this graph, I wish I could have gotten it, and I left the book at home. But in the graph, it shows a full circle, the different components that make up children. We have social awareness. We have a dedication to education. We have a focus on religion, and then there's a few other little pockets. And looking from the 1900s, each generation, there was like one or two areas that were weaker than all the rest. But, you know, it's pretty typical. You have strong, 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 and then something is, you know, for whatever reason, that defines that generation. This generation gets a thumbs up on every single component. And she had very good data to back it up. This generation has better social awareness than generations we've seen for the last 50 years. I think maybe part of it too is we're becoming so much more aware of our environment, the changes that are going on, connecting people, talk more about issues we didn't used to talk about, candidly. But I was so impressed with this is the generation. This generation is using less drugs overall. I mean, not too much, but they are. They're drinking less, more responsibility. So I guess I look at that, and I look at these challenges we have, and we're like, oh, God, the cell phone, you know, and the iPod, and the Wikipedia, and all, what's it going to be next? And maybe they do know how to handle it better than we think. Now, the example you gave, I mean, that's certainly concerning. And I don't have an answer for that. I think kids, divorce of the cell phone, there's always going to be kids that hurt other kids or do mean things. And the cell phone certainly doesn't help, because then they can go, I can put it on YouTube. Right. Yeah, yeah. So I think as we talk about if we can't beat them, join them, this was one book that really kind of pushed me over the edge, because I was very anti-phones in school and iPods in school, and I was a real curmudgeon until a couple years ago. And then I turned around a little bit. So just kind of giving you a little bit more of a view of where things are going. I think I covered all the topics I'd hope to. Yeah, she said they're huge in size as well as future impact. They're making a sharp break from Gen X trends and a direct reversal of boomer youth behavior. Why? Because as a nation, we've devoted more concern and attention their way than to any generation in, well, generations. Oh. This is one last thing that actually will wrap this up quite nicely. And this was just in a recent magazine, Leading and Learning with Technology. I think NECC puts it out. I could be mistaken. Written by Christine Greenhow. And she was following students and seeing, are they technically prepared? Do they know enough about technology going out into the world and so forth? A majority of students reported that basic tech competencies, that most of the tech competencies, despite their social economic background, were the same. No matter where on the pendulum they were pretty much had competency in, say, word processing, spreadsheets, so forth. She felt there was a huge amount from what she gathered in her study in informal learning, using the internet at home, cell phones, digital music, And interestingly enough, you mentioned the gaming, the web-based gaming. And I'm still out to lunch on that one. I haven't quite made up my mind. But if you're programming and doing the gaming, I see a lot of value in that. But that's because I'm a programmer. But I do see a lot of programming benefits long term. But she found that that's where they're learning a lot of their technology. Is in fact, there was an article years and years ago by Ann Doss Hyson, back when we were in the big whole language movement, and kids would always be working in their journals. I know I'm going over, I'll talk real fast. And if they were working in their journals and talking, they were on task. But what she found was, when you heard the noise level getting louder, and what a typical teacher or principal might say, oh, they're off task, listen to them, they're getting louder, and they're doing this and that, but if you actually listened to the conversation going back and forth, it was still on task at some level. So she coined the term off-task, on-task work. And I think that's what she's saying here, that this is off-task, on-task learning technology. So if you can't beat them, join them. I'm just not sure of all the answers yet, but it's something we need to be aware of. So I hope it helped a little, hope it was insightful.
Thank you very much.
Yes, the presentation will be on my website, and let me write the website up here. It's also on my Twitter, whatever. I'll write it up here.
This and all Learning 2.08 podcasts are released under a Creative Commons 3.0 share alike license. To learn more about the Learning 2.08 conference, visit our website at learning2cn.ning.com.